From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. Every now and then, scientists build a new gadget that shows them something they've never seen before. And that's what's happened with ocean scientists who tested an advanced form of sonar out on the North Atlantic. It revealed something amazing beneath the surface, an enormous gathering of herring, as many as 500 million. The scientists described their discovery this week in the journal Science. NPR's Christopher Joyce reports on what they're calling a city-state of fish.
Nicholas McCreese doesn't know much about fish. He's an engineer. But the device he invented, a powerful kind of sonar that can scan wide swaths of the ocean, got biologists pretty excited. McCreese and a team of those biologists took his device out into the North Atlantic, to the George's Bank, a hotspot for marine life. It was, he says, a shot in the dark. But soon, one of his colleagues saw something unusual on the sonar screen and told everyone to keep an eye out.
Hey, you better watch what's going to happen here and stick around here because I think you're going to see something. And she said, just watch, just watch, just watch. And there it happened. It was really amazing.
At sunset, herring that were spread out near the bottom of the ocean started to drift closer to each other. When they reached a critical density, the fish suddenly started to group into clumps. As each fish synchronized its movements with nearby fish, the clumps rapidly coalesced into a vast school 25 miles across. On the sonar screen, McCreese says it looked like the kind of wave created by spectators in a sports stadium.
Somebody stands up, and then the person next to them stands up, and then the next and the next. And before you know it, actually within seconds, you have a wave propagating from one end of the arena to the other.
As the fish aligned themselves with each other, these waves moved through the school 10 times as fast as any individual fish could swim, the same way a wave in a stadium crowd moves faster than people can. Ian Cousin is a biologist at Princeton University who studies this kind of behavior in everything from fish to locusts to people. He says each fish has to copy the movement of the next fish so that the whole mass can move almost instantly as one.
It seems that the fish are very sensitive to the behavior of those around them, and this can cause these sort of very rapidly propagating waves of change of behavior, and therefore it changes the population dynamics, you know, incredibly rapidly.
This is the first time scientists have observed such a chain reaction, start to finish, on such a large scale, according to Nicholas McCreese. His new sonar, it's called Ocean Acoustic Waveguide Remote Sensing, made it possible.
Below the surface, things were going on that nobody knew about. And it's because we just couldn't see it. With this new technology, we're essentially taking the darkness out of the ocean and just seeing things that we just couldn't see before. I mean, literally city-states of fish.
And this city-state moved. Overnight, the entire school swam south to warmer waters to mate. The next day, the fish returned to where they started and dispersed. And when the sun set the next evening, it all started again. Ian Cousin at Princeton says mating exposes the fish to predators, and behavior like this reduces each fish's risk of getting eaten.
It's very important that they synchronize their behavior to mate at the same time and to move together into particularly dangerous parts of the ocean.
Nicholas McCreese, a professor at MIT, compares the remote sensing project to what astronomers do.
When you put the Hubble telescope out there and look into the heavens, you don't know what you're going to see. And it's the same thing in the ocean. I mean, it's dark. It's dark like space. And if you can't sense it with your eyes and then you augment them with these other tools, you find things that you just weren't expecting.
McCreese's expedition was part of the Census of Marine Life, a 10-year-long effort to catalog life in the oceans. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
Spring is here, and that means mating season. Amphibians in search of partners can now check into a waterside frog hotel in Edinburgh, Scotland. The Amphibian Love Nest was started by community service volunteers who, with the Action Earth campaign, try to get more people to volunteer for environmental projects. Robert Henderson is the Scottish coordinator for the campaign, and he's in the studios of the BBC in Edinburgh. Welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Robert, are there a lot of frogs in Edinburgh?
They are slowly coming out of hibernation, and the first thing they do is they start hanging around water and preparing for the mating season. Unfortunately, this makes them very vulnerable to predators, and so what they really need is some safe shelter to help keep their numbers up.
What does the hotel look like?
It actually resembles a underground beehive. Now, the first thing that the frog will come to is the compost cafe, and this is an area where it's full of bugs and beasts. Then there's a little ramp that takes them upstairs to what we would probably term the sleeping area, and it's a place where frogs can meet and greet other frogs.
Do they pass on, like, word of mouth? So, hey, next year, come on over to the Frog Hotel, man. It's great.
Well, I think so. We hope that they don't have an image of it having revolving beds, heart-shaped jacuzzi and Barry White CDs pumping away all night or anything. It's much more like the Bates Hotel in Psycho, probably. But frogs, they like, very dark spaces. And for our opening event, we actually had a Las Vegas-style sign made that said, damp, dark rooms to rent by the hour, day or week.
Does the Compost Cafe provide room service?
There is no room service, but you'll have no trouble finding a bellhop at the hotel.
How long have you been in business?
The hotel was opened about 2 weeks ago, and it's to launch our campaign over here, which is to get people involved in environmental volunteering. And although, it's a fun thing to get a serious message across to people, but, you can get friends together, you can do something small yourself, and even in your own garden, we would encourage people to set up log piles and do rockeries that have got nice little nooks and crannies that the frogs can actually hide in and stay warm and be protected in.
Ooh, a chain of frog motels.
Yes, there's no franchise, so people are very free to take these ideas and run with them and do them themselves.
Robert Henderson is Scottish coordinator for the Community Service Volunteers Action Earth campaign. They run a frog hotel for amphibian amour in Edinburgh, Scotland. He joined us from the BBC studios there. Thank you so much.
That's great. Thank you. Bye.
This is NPR News.
One of India's biggest companies is rolling out what it calls the world's cheapest car. It's called the Nano, tiny car that looks like a jelly bean with wheels, which was unveiled last year to huge fanfare. Today, 6 months later than planned, it officially enters the marketplace. And we have more this morning from NPR's Philip Reeves in New Delhi.
It's been a rough ride for the Nano, and it hasn't even made it onto the road yet. When it rolled out before the TV cameras more than a year ago, the world was a different place. Ratan Tata, Tata's chairman, radiated confidence, calling his 10-foot-long vehicle the people's car, and comparing its creation with the moon landing. Newspapers were crammed with articles about how the Nano would revolutionise the auto industry by selling at the rough equivalent of just $2,000, about how hundreds of millions of middle-class Indians would now be able to get behind the wheel of a car for the first time. Weeks later, Tata was being feted as a global corporate power after buying the British-based luxury car makers Jaguar and Land Rover for more than $2 billion. Since then, a lot's happened, and not much of it's been good for Tata. In October, it abandoned its main Nano production plant in East India after a land dispute there that led to violent political protests. The factory's been moved to the western state of Gujarat. India's economic booms faded thanks to the global credit crisis. Burdened by debt, Tata Motors recently posted its first quarterly loss in 7 years. Today, Tata sought to reignite some of the excitement that greeted the Nano when it made its debut last year. It staged a dazzling launch ceremony in the city of Mumbai, broadcast live around India, whose media is intensely proud of this new product. Ratan Tata said he'd keep his promise about the price. Some basic Nanos will sell for 100,000 Indian rupees, roughly $2,000. Others will be more expensive, but even the top-end models are still relatively cheap, and that's an important factor in a world that's rediscovering the word frugal. Philip Reeves, NPR News, New Delhi.
And if you've been in the market for an electric car, you might have had your eye on the Tesla Roadster, a sleek, fully electric sports car unveiled in 2006 with a price tag of more than $100,000, which put the eco-friendly car out of reach for most car buyers. Today's last word in business, though, is plug-in bargain. Tesla has unveiled a new version of the car, its Model S series, still a fully electric sedan, but now you can factor in a $7,500 federal tax credit and get the car for a mere $50,000. So maybe your portfolio is worth half as much, but you can get the car for half as much as well. That's the business news on Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montagne.